The following program is not a production of Audio Journal. External programs like this are selected with the interests of our audience in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed in this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
The Innovator's Issue of Food and Wine, July 2026, continued. In season, a tart harvest, sour cherries brighten pies, jams, and even cocktails. By Doane Ewan. In 2008, my parents wanted to give me a tree for my front yard in Washington, D.C. I decided on cherry. They arrived with what looked like a single branch, about the length of my forearm and thinner than my pinky finger, with one white flower and a few leaves. It was the very last cherry tree at the garden center, a sour cherry variety called North Star that I had never heard of. My father dug a hole in the front yard, and we planted this twig of a tree. I was shocked that it made it through winter, and when spring came, it had the five flowers and one tiny cherry, bright red, slightly translucent, and extremely tart. The tree only yielded a handful of fruits the next few years, a period I referred to as tree purity. When in this fifth year, it produced thousands. Not wanting them to go to waste, I frantically picked as many as I could. I shared them with friends and complete strangers, talked about them at parties, and dreamed about them at night in my sleep. It was a cycle that repeated every year after that. For a few short weeks, my life would become consumed by the tiny tart cherries. I learned that the harvest season was short, typically occurring in June, and that they were especially delicious in a cherry pie, stewed in a jam, or preserved in a jar of brandied sour cherries. Good for garnishing a cocktail and for drawing out the taste of cherry season past those fleeting, frantic harvest days and into the summer months. Advertisement. Prosecco Doc Italian Genio. Share the Italian way of life. A world of tradition, beauty, and unmistakable Italian style captured in every glass of Prosecco Doc. Crafted exclusively in the nine provinces of Veneto and Friulia Venezia. This is a wine defined by place, its historic homeland. Discover the region behind every bottle at www.prosecco.wine. The perfect pair. Sour cherries are more difficult to pit than Bing cherries because of their small size. And yet, the OXO Good Grips Cherry and Olive Pitter is up for the task. The sharp die-cast pitter can cleanly punch through hundreds of cherries, and the non-slip grip ensures your hand won't tire out. Recipe. Brandied sour cherries. Active 20 minutes. Total 50 minutes. Plus 24-hour chilling. Makes 4 1-pint jars. Tart and juicy sour cherries take beautifully to brandy in this spiced, boozy concoction. Fresh sour cherries offer a firmer texture and vivid red fruit flavor, but frozen cherries work just as well when fresh or out of season. A timeless garnish for old fashions and Manhattans. These cherries are also deliciously spooned over ice cream or pancakes, or served alongside roasted meats and charcuterie. 1.5 cups granulated sugar. 1.5 cups water. 1/2 6-inch vanilla bean pod split lengthwise. 1.5 cups, 12 ounces, brandy or bourbon. 4 orange peel strips. 4 cups pitted fresh or thawed frozen sour cherries. Step 1. Heat sugar 1 1/2 cups of water, and vanilla bean pod if you're using that, and a medium saucepan over medium. Cook, stirring occasionally, until sugar is dissolved. It's about 4 minutes. Remove from heat and stir in brandy. Set brandy syrup aside. Step 2. Divide orange peel strips among 4 sterilized 1-pint jars with lids. Fill jars evenly with cherries, 1 cup per jar. Pour brandy syrup evenly over cherries, leaving 1/4 inch of room at the top of each jar. Let stand until syrup cools to room temperature. It's about 30 minutes. Seal jars and refrigerate for at least 24 hours. Brianna Colleen. Make ahead. Brandied cherries can be stored in jars in the refrigerator for up to 3 months. Note. To sterilize jars, submerge heat-proof jars upright in a large pot of boiling water for 10 minutes. Alternatively, run the jars through a full dishwasher cycle on the hottest setting, with a drying cycle just before use. Advertisement. Peacock Original. The 5-star weekend. There's a lot to unpack here. Peacock. New series. July 9th. Pantry Power. Founding flavors to honor America's 250th birthday. 5 historic staples. Barley, beer, cornmeal, beans, and maple syrup are transformed into modern weeknight meals. Grilled lamb chops with barley tabbouleh. Total 45 minutes. Serves 4. Coriander-crusted grilled lamb chops are served over a bright and herby grain salad in this simple, summery dinner. Chewy barley tossed with cucumber, tomato, and a lemony dressing stands in for bulgur in this hearty take on tabbouleh. Lamb rib chops offer exceptional tenderness and an elegant presentation, but loin chops would also be delicious. 12 lamb rib chops, 3/4 to 1 inch thick. 1 teaspoon of ground coriander. 5 1/2 teaspoons of kosher salt, divided. 1 1/4 teaspoon black pepper, divided. 1/3 cup plus 1 tablespoon extra virgin olive oil, divided, plus more for grill grates. 1 cup quick cooking barley. 5 1/4 cups water, divided. 1/4 cup tahini. 1/4 cup plus 2 tablespoons fresh lemon juice, about 3 lemons, divided. 4 garlic cloves, grated and divided. 1 large tomato, diced, about 2 cups. 1/2 cups finely chopped fresh parsley. 1/2 cup finely chopped fresh mint. Step 1. Sprinkle lamb rich chops with coriander, 2 teaspoons salt, and 1 teaspoon pepper. Drizzle with 1 tablespoon oil. Let stand at room temperature until ready to grill. Step 2. Combine barley, 5 cups water, and 1/2 teaspoon of salt in a medium saucepan. Bring to boil over high and cook until barley is tender, about 12 minutes. Remove from heat and let stand for 5 minutes. Drain and transfer barley to a large bowl set aside. Step 3. Preheat grill to medium-high, 400 degrees Fahrenheit to 450 degrees Fahrenheit. Place lamb chops on oiled grates. Grill, uncovered and flipping occasionally, until a thermometer inserted into thickest portion of lamb chops registers 125 degrees Fahrenheit for medium rare, about 6 minutes, or until desired degree of doneness. Transfer lamb chops to a plate and let rest for 5 minutes. Step 4. Meanwhile, whisk together tahini, 2 tablespoons lemon juice, 1 teaspoon salt, 1 grated garlic clove, and remaining 1/4 cup water in a small bowl until well combined. Set aside. Add tomato, parsley, mint, remaining 1/3 cup of oil, remaining 1/4 cup of lemon juice, remaining 3 grated garlic cloves, remaining 2 teaspoons salt, and remaining 1/4 teaspoon pepper to bowl with barley. Stir to combine. Step 5. Divide barley taboulé among shallow bowls using a slotted spoon. Top with evenly divided lamb chops and serve with tahini sauce. Ana thioptiso. Make ahead. Tahini sauce can be stored in an airtight container in the refrigerator for up to 4 days. Wine. A spicy Mediterranean red. 2021. Sella and Mosco, Cananao, di Sardegno Reserva. Beer burgers. Active, 50 minutes. Total, 1 hour 10 minutes. Serves 4. Yummy beer-braised onions are folded into the burger patties and spooned on top, delivering oniony sweetness in every bite. Cooking the burgers in a smoking hot cast iron skillet creates a deep golden crust. 1/4 cup unsalted butter divided. 1/4 cup canola oil divided. 2.5 pound yellow onions thinly sliced, about 8 cups. 2.5 teaspoons kosher salt divided. 1 12-ounce bottle lager beer divided. 1.5 pound 80% lean ground beef. 1 tablespoon Worcestershire sauce. 1 teaspoon black pepper. 4 Gouda cheese slices. 4 hamburger buns, split and toasted. Whole grain mustard, lettuce, sliced tomato, and pickled jalapeno slices for serving. Step 1. Heat 2 tablespoons butter and 2 tablespoons oil in a large cast iron skillet over medium high. Add onions and 1/2 teaspoon salt. Cook, stirring occasionally, until onions are very lightly browned. 25 to 30 minutes. Add 1 cup beer. Cook, stirring often until onions are jammy and liquid is completely absorbed. About 12 minutes. Transfer 1 cup onion mixture to a large bowl. Refrigerate until cooled. About 20 minutes. Transfer remaining about 1.5 cups onion mixture to a small bowl and set aside for topping burgers. Clean and dry skillet. Step 2. Chop the refrigerated onion mixture and return to a large bowl. Add beef and Worcestershire sauce, gently mixing until just combined. Form into 4 8-ounce patties, about 4.5 inches wide. Season patties evenly with pepper and remaining 2 teaspoons of salt. Step 3. Heat remaining 2 tablespoons oil in reserved skillet over high. When oil begins to smoke, add burger patties. Cook, undisturbed, until a brown crust forms on bottom sides, about 4 minutes. Flip burgers. Cook, undisturbed, for 2 minutes. Add 1/4 cup beer and remaining 2 tablespoons of butter to skillet around patties. Cook, basting burgers often until an instant read thermometer inserted into thickest portion of patties registers 125 degrees Fahrenheit for medium, about 2 minutes, or until desired degree of doneness. Topping each patty with 1 Gouda slice during the final 1 minute of cooking. Step 4. Spread the bottom half of each hamburger bun with whole grain mustard. Top with lettuce, cooked patties, reserved onion mixture, tomato slices, pickled jalapenos, and hamburger bun tops. Serve hot. Ana Thioctisto. Make ahead. Beer-braised onions can be stored in an airtight container in the refrigerator for up to 1 day. Saved burger patties can be stored covered in the refrigerator for up to 1 day. Beer. A crisp, lightly hoppy pilsner. Trümmer pils. Note. Enjoy the remaining 1/4 cup beer as the cooks treat. Grilled pesto chicken with Parmesan polenta. Active 1 hour 10 minutes. Total 1 hour 25 minutes. Serves 4. Creamy polenta takes on a summery feel when topped with grilled chicken, blistered cherry tomatoes, and a generous drizzle of basil pesto. Opting for bone-in, skin-on chicken breasts instead of boneless is not only more affordable, but also helps keep the meat juicy. If your pesto is fairly thick, thin it with olive oil before drizzling over the finished bowls. 2 large bone-in, skin-on chicken breasts, about 1 1/4 pound each. 1/2 teaspoon of black pepper. 4 teaspoon kosher salt divided, plus more to taste. 1 cup store-bought or homemade pesto, divided. Extra virgin olive oil for grill grates, plus more if needed. 12-ounce cherry tomatoes on the vine. 4 cups of water. 1 cup medium grind yellow cornmeal. 2 ounce Parmesan cheese grated, about 1/2 cup, plus more for garnish. 1/4 cup unsalted butter, fresh basil leaves for garnish. Step 1. Sprinkle chicken evenly with pepper and 2 teaspoons salt. Place in medium bowl. Add 1/2 cup pesto and turn to evenly coat. Let marinate at room temperature for 15 minutes. Step 2. Preheat a gas grill to medium-high, 400 degrees Fahrenheit to 450 degrees Fahrenheit on one side. Or push hot coals to one side of a charcoal grill. Place chicken on oiled grates over lit side of grill. Grill covered until a thermometer inserted into thickest portion of chicken registers 155 degrees Fahrenheit, 40 to 45 minutes. Turning every 5 minutes and moving chicken to unlit side of grill if needed to prevent excess browning. Transfer chicken to a plate. Internal temperature will continue to rise to 165 degrees Fahrenheit. Grill tomatoes on lit side of grill, uncovered and undisturbed until lightly charred, about 5 minutes. Then set aside. Step 3. Bring 4 cups of water and remaining 2 teaspoons salt to a boil in a medium saucepan over high. Whisk in cornmeal in a slow, steady stream. Reduce heat to medium. Cook, stirring often until tender and creamy, about 14 minutes. Remove from heat. Stir in Parmesan and butter. Step 4. Divide polenta evenly among 4 bowls. Slice chicken from the bone and divide among bowls along with grilled tomatoes. Sprinkle sliced chicken with additional salt to taste. If remaining 1/2 cup pesto is on the thick side, stir in olive oil to thin to a drizzling consistency. Spoon pesto over bowls. Garnish with basil and additional Parmesan. Anna Fioctisto. Wine. A light-bodied Italian red. 2023, Elena Walsh, Shibia. Note, to make your own pesto, visit foodandwine.com/pesto. If cherry tomatoes on the vine aren't available, thread loose cherry tomatoes onto skewers in order to keep them contained on the grill. Slide them off the skewers to serve. Medium grind cornmeal, such as Bob's Red Mill, is available at most grocery stores or online at walmart.com. Lemony white bean salad. Total, 20 minutes. Serves 4. Lean on creamy canned cannellini beans for a bright, herb-forward bean salad in only 20 minutes. Adding minced anchovies to the lemon Dijon dressing offers a subtle hint of umami, and briefly soaking shallots in citrus juice mellows their sharp bite. Finishing the salad with chopped smoked almonds adds crunch and a hint of smokiness, but roasted salted almonds or even crushed pita chips would be equally delicious. One shallot, thinly sliced, about 1/4 cup. 1 teaspoon grated lemon zest, plus 1/4 cup fresh lemon juice, about 2 lemons. 1 tablespoon Dijon mustard. 3 small anchovy fillets minced, about 1 teaspoon. 2 15-ounce cans cannellini beans, drained and rinsed. 2 large celery stalks, thinly sliced, about 1 cup. 1/2 cup extra virgin olive oil. 1/4 cup chopped fresh dill, plus more for garnish. 1/4 cup chopped fresh parsley. 1 teaspoon granulated sugar. 1 teaspoon kosher salt. 1/2 teaspoon black pepper. 4 ounce feta cheese crumbled, about 1 cup. 3 cups baby arugula. Chopped smoked almonds for garnish. Step 1. Stir together shallot, lemon zest, and juice. Dijon mustard and anchovies in a large bowl. Let stand for 10 minutes. Stir in beans, celery, oil, dill, parsley, sugar, salt, and pepper until beans are well coated. Fold in feta. Step 2. Add arugula to bean mixture and toss gently to incorporate. Garnish with chopped and smoked almonds and additional dill. Anna Theoctisto. Make ahead. Bean salad can be prepared through step 1 and stored in an airtight container in the refrigerator for up to 1 day. Proceed with step 2 just before serving. Wine. A fresh, berry-scented Provençal Rosé, 2025, Parasol Cuvée des Commandeurs, Maple Ginger Stannin, active 25 minutes, total 35 minutes, serves 4. Maple syrup sweetens the sauce for this teriyaki-inspired glazed salmon. Quick-cooking summer squash and green beans are roasted alongside salmon fillets for a sheet pan dinner that comes together in only 35 minutes. Reserve a portion of the marinade and simmer it to reduce and thicken it for glazing the salmon and drizzling over the vegetables. 3/4 cup pure maple syrup. 6 tablespoons lower sodium soy sauce. 2 teaspoons grated garlic from 2 large garlic cloves. 2 teaspoons grated ginger, about 1 1.5-inch piece. 4 6-ounce skin-on center-cut salmon fillets, about 1 to 1 1/4 inches thick. 2 tablespoons unsalted butter cut into pieces. 1.5 teaspoon of rice vinegar. 8 ounces mixed summer squash, such as yellow squash or zucchini, sliced into 1/4-inch thick half moons. 8 ounce haricots verts, French green beans. 2 tablespoons olive oil. 1 teaspoon kosher salt. 1/2 teaspoon black pepper. Cooked white rice for serving. Sliced scallions for garnish. Optional. Step 1. Preheat oven to broil with rack about 6 inches from heat. Whisk together maple syrup, soy sauce, garlic, and ginger in a medium bowl until combined. Transfer 3/4 cup syrup mixture to a small saucepan. Set aside. Add salmon, skin side up, to remaining 1/2 cup syrup mixture in bowl. Let stand at room temperature about 15 minutes. Step 2. Meanwhile, bring maple syrup mixture in saucepan to a simmer over medium high. Cook, stirring often and adjusting heat as needed to maintain a vigorous simmer until thickened and syrupy, about 10 minutes. Remove from heat and stir in butter and vinegar, then set aside. Step 3. Place squash and haricots verts on a large rimmed baking sheet. Toss with oil, salt, and pepper. Spread vegetables to cover 2/3 of baking sheet. Remove salmon from marinade and place skin side down on empty side of baking sheet. Discard marinade. Step 4. Broil until vegetables are tender and a thermometer inserted into thickest portion of salmon registers 120 degrees Fahrenheit, about 8 minutes. Brushing salmon with 2 tablespoons reduced maple syrup mixture during final 2 minutes of broiling. Remove from oven. Brush salmon with 1 tablespoon reduced maple syrup mixture. Step 5. Divide cooked white rice, salmon, and vegetables among serving plates. Drizzle with remaining reduced maple syrup, and garnish with scallions if desired. Anna Theoctisto. Wine. A unoaked Oregon Chardonnay. 2024. Sehalem Inox, Willamette Valley. Easy Bakes. Buckle up when blueberries are at their peak. This simple dessert is the treat to bake. Dating back to 19th century New England, blueberry buckle is a classic old-school American dessert, similar to a coffee cake, but studded with fresh fruit. The buckle's clever name is a clue of what's to come. As the cake rises and bakes, the sweet, buttery streusel surface buckles, forming dips and ridges around pockets of juicy berries. Don't mistake the cake's speed and simplicity for ordinariness. This buckle turns a handful of pantry staples into a peak season blueberry dessert that you'll want to put on repeat all summer long. Andy Gosnell. Blueberry Buckle. Active, 30 minutes. Total, 1 hour and 30 minutes. Makes 1 9-inch square cake. Sweet, tart blueberries are nestled into a tender vanilla cake and topped with a crumbly spiced streusel. For the best buckle, one with craggy ridges, fold the majority of the berries into the batter, then scatter the rest over the top so they burst into jammy sweetness as the cake bakes. Cake. Cooking spray. 2.5 cups all-purpose flour. About 10 5/8 ounce. 1 tablespoon of baking powder. 1 teaspoon of kosher salt. 1/4 teaspoon of ground nutmeg. 1 cup granulated sugar. 5 tablespoons unsalted butter, softened. 1 large egg. 1 large egg yolk. 2 teaspoons vanilla extract. 2/3 cup whole milk. 3 cups fresh blueberries, about 1 pound, divided. Streusel. 1/2 cup all-purpose flour, about 2 1/8 ounce. 1/2 cup granulated sugar. 3/4 teaspoon ground cinnamon. 1/4 teaspoon ground nutmeg. 1/4 teaspoon kosher salt. 1/4 cup unsalted butter, softened. Step 1. Make the cake. Preheat oven to 375 degrees Fahrenheit. Lightly coat a 9-inch square baking pan with cooking spray. Line bottom and sides of pan with parchment paper, leaving a 1-inch overhang on 2 opposite sides. Lightly coat parchment with cooking spray, then set aside. Step 2. Whisk together flour, baking powder, salt, and nutmeg in a medium bowl. Set aside. Beat sugar and butter in a large bowl with an electric mixer on medium speed until fluffy. This should take 2 to 3 minutes. Add egg, egg yolk, and vanilla. Beat until smooth, about 30 seconds, stopping to scrape down sides of bowl as needed. With mixer on medium-low speed, add flour mixture alternately with milk and 3 additions, beginning and ending with flour mixture, beating until just combined after each addition. Gently fold in 2.5 cups blueberries. Spread batter in prepared pan. Scatter remaining 1/2 cup blueberries over the top. Step 3. Make the streusel. Stir together flour, sugar, cinnamon, nutmeg, and salt in a medium bowl. Add butter and incorporate using a pastry blender or your fingertips until mixture is crumbly. Sprinkle streusel evenly over batter and baking pan. Step 4. Bake until a wooden pick inserted into center of cake comes out clean. 40 to 45 minutes. Rotating pan halfway through baking time. Let cool in baking pan on a wire rack for about 20 minutes. Using parchment paper overhang as handles. Remove cake from pan. Discard parchment paper. Serve warm or let cool completely on wire rack. Nicole Hopper. Make ahead. Cake can be stored, covered, at room temperature for up to 2 days or in the refrigerator for up to 4 days. If chilled, let cake come to room temperature before serving. Advertisement. Uncork Extraordinary. Santa Margarita Pinot Grigio. Bottle service. Raspberry sorbet is drizzled with creme de cassis and doused with brut champagne to make a Cour Royal float. Page 63. Cocktail hour. Boozy floats. Endlessly riffable and easy to assemble, these icy alcohol-spiked desserts are perfect for summer. By Osette Barber Winter. As the days grow longer, and my kitchen achieves an ambient temperature of the oven is not an option, I start dreaming up ways to simplify lunch, dinner, and, of course, dessert. Boozy sorbet is an ingenious combination I first came across at New York City's buzzy French restaurant, Bateau Royal, where the best way to end every meal is an ice-cold coupe de cassis sorbet topped with a generous pour of champagne. It's a no-recipe recipe that checks all of my boxes for summertime hosting. Not only is it a deceptively simple, but it's also endlessly modifiable based on personal taste. And for guests who don't imbibe, you can easily substitute non-alcoholic bubbly or spirits. Plus, the wow factor of topping sorbet with fizzy booze makes the whole production feel just as impressive as, say, slicing into a fruit tart or a pound cake that likely took a few hours and the remaining shreds of my sanity to bake. While the Cour Royal float is closely inspired by Chateau Royal's festive offering, a scrapino is a classic Italian recipe that proves the enduring and cross-cultural appeal of liquor, in this case, bubbly and vodka, and a sweet frozen treat. Looking to take things up a notch, and don't mind whipping out the cocktail shaker. The sherbet sidecar makes for a dazzling tableside pour and will have your guests wondering why they don't reach for a cognac more often. Sherbet sidecar. Total 5 minutes. Serves 1. A classic sidecar cocktail combines cognac, orange liqueur, and lemon juice. This recipe, inspired by the citrusy notes of that beloved beverage, doubles down on the orange with the addition of creamy store-bought orange sherbet. The sherbet gets topped with a classic sidecar, which comes together quickly in a cocktail shaker. For an extra festive drink, serve the float in a coupe glass with a sugared rim. 1/4 cup, 2 ounces, of cognac. 1.5 tablespoons, 3/4 ounce. Contro. 1/2 tablespoons, fresh lemon juice plus one lemon wedge divided, granulated sugar, half cup orange sherbet. Step 1. Fill a cocktail shaker with ice. Add cognac, Cointreau, and lemon juice. Shake vigorously until well chilled, about 10 seconds. Step 2. Swipe half the rim of a chilled coupe glass with lemon wedger. Dip moistened edge in sugar to coat. Add orange sherbet to prepared glass. Step 3. Strain cocktail over sherbet in prepared glass. Serve immediately. Lucy Simon. Scropino. Total 5 minutes serves 1. This float meets shake is a traditional Venetian cocktail made by whisking lemon sorbet with Prosecco and vodka in a bowl until smooth and spoonable. With its puckery lemon tang and whisper of effervescence, this frosty cocktail is the perfect treat for hot summer afternoons. The Prosecco adds citrusy notes and a touch of bitterness, while the vodka lends additional fortification. 1/4 cup lemon sorbet softened. 2 tablespoons, 1 ounce, Prosecco. 2 tablespoons, 1 ounce vodka. Lemon peel spiral for garnish, plus 1.5 teaspoons of fresh lemon juice divided. Step 1. Combine lemon sorbet, Prosecco, vodka, and lemon juice in a small chilled bowl. Whisk vigorously until smooth and lightly frothy, about 1 minute. Step 2. Pour mixture into chilled flute. Garnish with lemon peel, spiral. Serve immediately. Lucy Simon. A Cur Royal float. Total 5 minutes. Serves 1. Berry forward and luxuriously bubbly. This riff on a Cur Royal was inspired by the champagne-topped Cassis Sorbet at Chateau Royal in New York City. The refreshing float puts a frozen spin on the classic ingredients of a Cur Royal. Champagne and creme de cassis, raspberry sorbet picks up the berry notes of the black currant liqueur, while brut champagne brings zippy effervescence and creme de cassis lends a vibrant purple hue. 1/2 cup raspberry sorbet. 1.5 teaspoons, 1/4 ounce, creme de cassis. 1/4 cup, 2 ounces of filled brut champagne. Scoop raspberry sorbet into a chilled coupe glass. Drizzle with creme de cassis and top with champagne. Serve immediately. Lucy Simon. Bottle service. The history of American wine in 25 bottles. Grab a bottle opener and get ready to sip your way through over 250 years of winemaking in the U.S. by Ray Isle. Wine has a long history, longer than most people realize here in America. The first wines in what's now the United States were made by French Huguenot immigrants in Florida in the 1500s, using local Muscadine grapes, and they were probably quite appalled if they compared the result to what they were used to drinking back home. That effort didn't last, not least because the Florida Huguenot colony was massacred by Spanish soldiers in 1565. Jump forward 60 years or so, and the first wines from Vitis vinifera vines, the source of all the European varieties we love best, Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Sauvignon Blanc, and so on, arrived in New Mexico. There, and later in California, Spanish missionaries planted a grape known as L'Estan Preto, which later became known as the Mission Grape. But winemaking here didn't really get going until the 1800s, when wineries were established throughout the country, New York, Ohio, Missouri, and crucially, California, where the climate and soil provided inarguably suited to wine grapes. And that's where this somewhat ragtag, bottle-by-bottle history of wine in the U.S. of A. starts. Are there omissions? Unquestionably. Sorry, Ohio. But drink along with it, and you'll get a good sense of the wild ride that fermented grape juice has had on these shores. 1847. American grapes. Before California's wineries began to dominate the American wine landscape, wineries in the East and Midwest were the center of American wine production. One of the first was Missouri's Stonehill Winery, which still operates today. Most of these wines were made with Native American grape varieties, Norton specifically at Stonehill, a focus that was soon eclipsed by the rise of classic European varieties like Cabernet Sauvignon. Wine to try. 2022. Stonehill Winery Norton. $24. Earthy and spicy, this unusual and very historic red comes from vines planted above the banks of the Missouri River. 1854. A missionary legacy. Some of the oldest surviving Vitis vinifera vines in the U.S. grown in an 8-acre plot at the Deaver Vineyards in Amador County, California. They're a relic of an even older timeline. The Mission variety originated in Spain and was brought to present-day California by Jesuit and Franciscan missionaries, first by Junipero Serra at the Mission San Diego de Alcala in 1769. They were the first European wine grapes to be planted here. Today, Chris Brockway at Brock Cellars uses the 1854 vines at Deaver to make his Angelica modeled on the style of the wine that the Spanish missionaries once made. Wine to try. 2020 Brock Cellars Angelica. $58. An echo of the past, this very old-style dessert wine lures you in with suggestions of caramelized figs, toasted nuts, and candied citrus peels. 1857. The father of California wine. California wine history is peppered with colorful characters, but few as flamboyant as the founder of Buena Vista Winery, the first premium winery in the state, and one of the oldest still operating in its original location. Agaston Haresthy, a Hungarian nobleman, writer, grapevine and porter, sheriff, San Diego County, reckless entrepreneur, and, as he's known, the father of California viticulture, made some of the state's earliest and best wines. That is, before he went bankrupt, moved to Nicaragua, and met his demise by falling into a river, and it's speculated being devoured by alligators. Wine to try. 2023. Buena Vista, Sonoma County Private Reserve Zinfandel. $64. Zinfandel was one of the grapes that Hazareth planned back in the 1800s, and Buena Vista still produces it today, as shown in this robusty, fruity bottling with its light hints of juniper and espresso. 1861. Napa Valley opens its doors. The oldest still operating winery in Napa Valley was founded by Charles Krug, a Prussian immigrant who first purchased vines in Sonoma from Buena Vista's Augustin Hazareth. He opened the first public tasting room in California in 1882 and spurred Napa Valley's first wave of wineries, a number that rose to more than 140 by 1889. Years later, in 1943, the Mondavi family purchased the winery after some family turmoil and a quite famous fistfight with his brother Peter. Robert Mondavi left in 1966 to carve his own iconic path in the history of Napa Valley wine, but Krug remains owned by Peter Mondavi's side of the family. Wine to try. 2023. Charles Krug Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon. $42. Rich, with black cherry and black currant fruit, supported by plush tannins, this is a classic Napa Valley Cabernet. The 1880s. European immigrants. California vineyards. The mid to late 1800s saw a wave of European immigration to California. One result was a burst of vineyards, some of which still exist today. Consider the Bechtold Vineyard in Lodi, planted by German immigrant Joseph Spanker in 1886, who'd arrived in the area 18 years before with exactly 27 cents in his pocket. It's the oldest continuously farmed vineyard in the Lodi Ava, as well as home to the oldest surviving plot of Sinsalt vines in the planet. A number of wineries currently work with fruit from Bechtold, including Birichino, Michael David Winery, and Turley Wine Cellars. Wine to Try, 2024. Turley Wine Cellars, Bechtold Vineyard, Lodi, Sinsalt, $30. Bright, berry notes race through this lively, lightly spiced old vine red. Bottle service continued. 1912. Hello, Chardonnay. Just before World War I, second-generation vintner Ernest Wente partnered with Leon Bonnet of University of California, Davis to import fine wine grape cuttings from France. These included what would become the Wente clone of Chardonnay, the source material for some 75% of all the Chardonnay planted in California today. Wine to Try, 2024, Wente Family Vineyards, Eric Chardonnay, Livermore Valley, $40. No oak aging is used for this green apple-scented white, which lets its bright flavors shine through. 1920 to 1933, America declares war on wine. Among the biggest government mistakes of all time was the 18th Amendment, which banned all alcohol production, importation, and sales in the United States. Hello, bootlegging. And hello, vine glow. During Prohibition, wine producers like Gallo survived partly by making dehydrated bricks of grape juice. Vine glow was one such, which were advertised with tips for preventing fermentation, tips that were dutifully ignored by everyone who bought the stuff. 1930s to 1940s. Burgundy, or, in quotations, Burgundy. Many wines produced in the U.S. during these years were generics, blends that were bottled under familiar European names but had little to do with those actual wines. For example, Louis M. Martini's California Burgundy was mostly Petite Syrah, and the winery's Chianti relied heavily on Zinfandel. One stalwart that still exists today is Gallo's Hardy Burgundy, which for many years scooped up Zinfandel from some of California's oldest vineyards until people, like Joel Peterson at Ravenswood, founded in 1976 and now owned by Gallo, realized exactly how good those grapes were. Wine to Try, 2023, Ravenswood Teldeschi Vineyard Zinfandel, $50. It's anything but generic. Even if grapes from these 1890s-era vines once went into those wines, think peppery spice and intense, juicy, wild berry flavors. 1938, the return of fine wine. One of the most significant figures in post-Prohibition winemaking in the United States was Russian immigrant Andrei Chelistyev, who started working at Napa Valley's Balio Vineyard. In 1938, after being hired by owner Georges de la Tour, Chelistyev effectively resurrected fine winemaking in the U.S., bringing European techniques and a rigorous scientific approach to bear on California's viticulture abundance, and later in Washington and Oregon, too. Wine to Try, 2023, Beaulieu Vineyard, Georges de la Tour Private Reserve Cabernet Sauvignon, $180. One of the historic benchmarks of Napa Valley, stewarded for many years by winemaking legend Andrei Chelistyev, this powerful red will see its 87th vintage in 2025. 1949. Welcome to Napa Valley. It's probably the most famous wine sign in the world. Erected by the Napa Valley vintners in 1949, along the side of State Route 29 in the heart of the valley, This now deeply retro-looking sign with its "Welcome to this world-famous wine-growing region" slogan is a traffic-snarling must-stop for a substantial percentage of Napa Valley's 3.7 million visitors per year. Among the vintners present for its unveiling, Robert Mondavi, of course. Wine to Try, 2022. Robert Mondavi, Winery Napa Valley, Cabernet Sauvignon, $55. Banking spice notes from oak, hints of cedar, and plenty of Kirsch-like cherry flavors define the signature of Napa Cabernet. 1957. New York is not too cold. There were vineyards in New York as early as 1670s, but until 1962, wine here was made only from Native American varieties such as Concord and Catawba, or cold hardy hybrids like Baco Noir. Then Ukrainian immigrant and winemaker Constantine Frank introduced Vitis vinifera vines, Pinot Noir, Riesling, and others, to the Finger Lakes region, and proved that they could grow successfully there. This started a long-term shift toward higher quality wines. Wine to Try, 2024. Dr. Constantine Frank Finger Lakes Dry Riesling, $22. All spring flowers and fresh lime zest, this buoyant white ought to convince even the strongest of doubters how good Finger Lakes Rieslings can be. 1965. German grapes in Washington State. This was the year when American wine growers, later become Chateau Saint-Michel in 1976, planted the first Riesling vines in Washington State in the Yakima Valley. Washington would go on to produce more Riesling than any other state in the U.S., with Chateau Saint-Michel as one of the largest Riesling producers anywhere, over 500,000 cases per year today. Wine to Try, 2024, Chateau Saint-Michel Columbia Valley Riesling, $12. Lightly off-dry, brisk, and palate-wetting, this widely available white over-delivers for its modest price. 1965. It's Willamette, damn it. David Lett was supposed to go to medical school. Instead, he fell in love with winemaking, and in 1965 ventured from California to Oregon's Willamette Valley with a car full of Pinot Noir cuttings, the first ever planted there. Today, Willamette is one of the world's great Pinot regions, and at the Erie Vineyards, David's son, Jason Lett, deftly continues his father's work. Wine to Try, 2022, the Erie Vineyards, the Erie Pinot Noir, $90. The original vines at Erie produced this ethereal red-fruited Pinot with its hints of forest floor and spice. If you can't find it, the winery's flagship estate, Pinot Noir, $60, is also stellar. 1972, California bubbles break political ice. On February 25th, 1972, the President Richard Nixon and Chinese Premier Zhou Enlai toasted the end of a historic four-day visit with glasses of Schramsberg Blanc, de Blanc Sparkling, known as the Toast to Peace. It heralded the start of thawing relations between China and the U.S. and drove plenty of visibility for the U.S. wine industry. Wine to Try, 2022, Schramsberg Blanc de Blanc's Brut, $44. One of the first wines to show that California sparkling could rival champagne, this Blanc de Blanc's 100% Chardonnay bottling is fragrant and precise with finely cut green apple and delicate lemon-lime notes. 1974. Pink Power. The first pink-hued white Zinfandel was a mistake, bottled after a stuck fermentation where yeast becomes dormant before fermentation is completed, left Sutter Home's 1974 White Zinfandel pink instead of white. First sold out of the door at the winery, It created a craze for lightly sweet pink wine that lasted for decades. One little known fact, the wine was first labeled as Oil de Perdrix, a white Zinfandel wine. Wine to try. Nevada Sutter Home White Zinfandel, $7. As it was back in 74, so it is today. Vividly pink-hued, lightly sweet, with an abundance of ripe strawberry and watermelon flavor. 1976, The Judgment of Paris. 2026 marks the 50th anniversary of the single most famous wine tasting ever. British wine merchant Stephen Spurrier organized a blind taste-off between top French and California wines in Paris with a panel of French judges. California's victory made wine lovers everywhere recognize that its wines could compete and win against the greatest in the world. Wine to try. 2023 Stag's Leap Wine Cellars SLV Cabernet Sauvignon, $250. The 73 vintage stunned the world when it triumphed over the best of Bordeaux. 50 years later, the 2023 is also gorgeous, its cassis and blackberry core wrapped in firm, refined tannins and lifted by hints of violet and toasty oak. 1976, Virginia vines take off. Though Thomas Jefferson famously attempted to grow European varieties in Virginia, he was not successful. But the modern era of Virginia wine, which started in 1976 when Italy's Gianni Zonin founded Barbersville Vineyards, has proved that Jefferson wasn't actually off base. The best Virginia wines are excellent, and at Barbersville, winemaker Luca Pescina has proved that over and over again in his 36 years at the helm. Wine to try, 2024. Barbersville Vineyards, Vermentino Reserve, $23. Light and bright, this Virginia white wins you over with delicate citrus notes and racy acidity. 1976. Don't mess with Texas wine. The first Texas winery to open after Prohibition in 1976, Llano Estacado Winery helped kickstart the Texas wine industry. Founded on the outskirts of Lubbock by Bob Reed and Clinton Doc McPherson, who'd experimented with planting Vitis vinifera grapes in the area in the 1960s, Llano Estacado's wines showed that the arid Texas high plains were in fact prime grape-growing territory, and that early work paved the way for more than 500 wineries in Texas today. Wine to try. 2022 Llano Estacado Cellar Reserve, Tempranillo, $32. Cherries, black plums, and a light leathery note are at the heart of this substantial Texas red. 1982, The Chardonnay Room. Fern bars for everyone. In 1982, Kendall Jackson released the first vintage of its Vintner's Reserve Chardonnay, and the Chardonnay craze started in earnest. KJ's initial 18,000 cases sold out quickly. The next year, owner Jess Jackson made 36,000, and those sold out just as fast. Today, more than 2.8 million cases are sold each year. Wine to try. 2024 Kendall Jackson Vintner's Reserve Chardonnay, $17. Still the most popular Chardonnay in America, this ubiquitous bottling has pulled back a little on richness over the years, leaning more toward brighter acidity and focus. 1984. Opus One breaks a barrier. A groundbreaking collaboration between Robert Mondavi and Bordeaux's Baron Philippe de Rothschild, Opus One set a quality standard for great California wine. It also set a new price record coming out at $50 a bottle, the most expensive California wine on the market at the time. That in turn started a snowball rolling downhill price explosion for Napa Valley Cabernets. Consider, the 1990 vintage of competitor Harlan Estate's famed Red, one of the most sought-after wines from Napa Valley, was $65 a bottle. In 1999, it hit $250. Today, Harlan bottles can run over $1,000.